drive myself. And I worked in a llama club, you know, and I would answer the phone and they didn't know, but they kind of had a hotline going there for NA. And because when an addict would call in, why I prefer to go to NA, you know. And so at that time, trying to get in extra meetings going to AA, we were referred to as those addicts, you know. And most of them would look at me and they'd say, oh, you're okay, Betty, it's all right. But you know, those addicts got to get out of here. And I'd say, I don't think it's changed too much. And thank God that we have this fellowship. But as time went on, there became more and more NA meetings, and I broke away more and more from the other program, you know, from AA. And I, you know, I still, to this day, I'm going to be jumping around like crazy, but to this day, I still, when someone says, oh, there's a new program, or there's such and such a program, I go and investigate to see what's going on, see if there's something better going on. And, you know, like, I went to one program, I stayed for about a half hour, and then I smiled and gave everybody hugs, and they said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to an NA meeting. But after 2 years in the program, I signed myself in the psychiatric hospital with the understanding I'd be given no drugs. And it was in the valley, and I I knew I had to make my phone call. And the only one I could think of out there was my ex-brother-in-law, I tell you, which was June. And so I thought, well, how is he going to accept talking to me? I didn't know, you know, what the feelings will be. So I called him, and he said, well, I heard you're in the program. And I said, you know, and I said, he said, what do you need, Betty? And I told him where I was at. I said, I'd like to talk to another woman. I'd like to get to some NA meetings. And he said, sure. And he said, is there anything you need? And at that time, I was smoking. I said, a pack of cigarettes. And he came out to see me at the hospital. He had, you know, girls come out. And there was one gal in particular, Alice. And she was like, I didn't remember, but and she came out and took me to some meetings. Another gal, Lynn. But, when Jimmy came out to see me, we started talking, and, you know, it was like he started talking, and I thought, God, I love listening to this man talk. And then it was like we started talking to one another. And it's like we never stopped talking to one another. I mean, I've got to tell you, even to this day, I'm still saying, I find myself saying, oh, Jimmy, did you hear that? You know, it's kind of like, I don't know if he hears me or not, you know, but it's kind of like all of a sudden, I don't care. You know, I kind of think he does this one. But we just really hit it off really great. And we had so much that we wanted out of life. That we had, you know, in common. And he introduced me to so many people out in the valley, and I wound up moving out to the valley. And sorry, Father, but so I knew it. We were living together. We had our own places. He was staying at my place, Marty was going home. And so we went like from 1973 until 1977, we lived together, and then we got married in 77. Bill was talking about the office moving around. You know, I had donated a copy machine to the office when it was on Crenshaw Boulevard years ago, and then you know, the office at that time, there were so many addicts living there, and they were trying to learn to live together. There was men and women living together, and I don't know, but anyway, it was that one. And I did some work there, but it was kind of hard to catch anybody in the office. And so then it was moved to suicide prevention in L.A., and Jim and I went over there one night to a meeting there, and we saw that a lot of stuff had disappeared. It wasn't around. The coffee machine was gone. There wasn't hardly anything there. And people were going in and out, whoever wanted to go in and out in suicide prevention, you know, if you caught, they got kind of mixed up about suicide prevention and NA. And so, you know, the traditions were being broken there. And so it wound up moving to Van Nuys. And in Van Nuys, why the, it was upstairs, and our landlord was a bail bondsman. And it was very interesting, this office. You know, I really love thinking about that time. It was like, it was close. I was living in Van Nuys at the time, so it was close to me. And Jimmy take his truck, and I take my car, and we park, and we would have to keep putting money in the meter. There was no place to park, you know, so it had a meter, and we'd have to remember to run downstairs and put money in the meter every once in a while. And it was hard catching the director, you know, of the World Service Office, and he had the checks in his trunk of his car or at home, or, you know, it was always trying to catch him. That was Jack at the time, I think he was on the bill. And we wound up with, you know, no money at times, not being able to pay the landlord and to pay, we shared utilities with another office there. And it was embarrassing at times, I have a bail bondsman, the landlord coming at me and saying, did you have the rent? You know, and I think, well, just a moment, you know, Jimmy. And working through all that. But decided that it would be best to move the office to Jimmy's home. And so we gave back. This is what was there. Yeah, oh, incidentally, I started a woman's NA meeting in that office also. And Jimmy was the first one to go to a woman's NA meeting. But I kept calling women up on the phone, and they decided that, you know, these meetings were going on, so maybe they better come to these meetings. But it was in a bad district to where they were scared to come there, because that's where they used to come and get all their stuff. That's where they used to come and come. And we used to be like in groups too, because it was pretty rough neighborhood. But anyway, so we moved the stuff out of the office and we gave back the desk. And I think that desk was yours, wasn't it? Then we returned it to you. Someone we returned the desk, because Jimmy already had so many desks in his home. And through the years, Jimmy used to pick up all the mail, and he would give the people at the office the mail. He would sort it out and then give them the mail. He would answer what was supposed to be answered. He was the one that started box 622. He opened up that box. But anyway, so he had the dental machine. He already had a lot of the stuff there in his home. When we moved, there was a box like this. What would you say that? How big is that, Bill?
2x2?
12 by 12 inches or something, you know, whatever. And that's what was left of the files, you know. And we have a few boxes of booklets and a filing cabinet. And that's what we moved to the house. You know, we left the old couch that was there, the old chair in the office. And so it went to Jimmy's home, and it started in a little room there, and that grew, you know, there was like the booklets, and we used to sit, you know, a group of us or whoever was there, you know, we'd sit and we'd stamp, and you'll see some of the old ones will have like a red stamp on the back of it, you know. In fact, this was changed. It used to be, remember, Bill, it was a longer one, a little slimmer. But we added in 77, it was Greg, Jimmy, and I, and we added some other stories into this book, and we made it more, we made it easier to mail. But we put the extra stories in because we felt that it went more into more people, into more walks of life. You know? And but anyway, so it went into this one little room, and you know, through the time period that it was in Jimmy's home, it went from the little room there, it went into the kitchen, it went into the laundry room, it went into the living room, to the three bedrooms, to the front porch, to the storage bin that I had put up that I thought maybe I can have an extra little office back there, but that didn't work out. And up in the attic, the place was packed with things. That's how much it grew when it was there. So, you know, when they say that, how can I say this? And they say that this man, you know, was, I mean, how could something grow like that? And how could, you know, this way, you know. I cannot describe to you really in full what this man was like, because it just seems like, you know. He had a terrific memory. He could remember, you know, people come up to me and said, "Hey, can you remember talking on the phone or anything?" I got to tell you, Jimmy remembered names. He remembered exactly what was said. If you went up to him years later and you said something to him, he would continue the conversation with you from where he left off talking to you years ago. That's how terrific his memory was. He was a very loving man. He loved people. He loved the attic, really. And he didn't get into what you used or how you used it. He got into living life. You know. He taught me a great deal. I'm very grateful that I knew this man. You know, different people said something about, "We don't glorify you," because someone said they went into the office and they asked to see a picture of Jimmy and they said, "We don't glorify anybody." Nobody, you know, really started. And it was just a group of people. Well, I'm not saying glorify anybody, but you get recognition where recognition comes. That was told to me, and it's common knowledge among a lot of people who've been around for a long time, that, you know, before they wrote the bylaws, you know, in the 50s, they had already started Narcotics Anonymous, and then someone come along and said, we heard there's a Narcotics Anonymous in New York. They say, great, that's terrific. Let's, you know, there's more people. Let's see if they want to join, you know, what we got out here in California. And so someone went out to New York and asked them whether or not they would like to join up. You know, hey, let's get together. And they said, no, our program is completely different from your program. You know, our program isn't the same as yours. You guys go ahead and do what you got to do. We got to do what we got to do. And so they said, you know, in California, they said, okay, this is where, you know, we've got this going. This is where we're going to start. And so that's how it got started. And I think that recognition should be given to the people who started then. You know, and I want to tell you that NA folded at one point, and there was only Jimmy and Sylvia Westwood, because a lot of people went, either died or they went back to AA, but Sylvia Westwood and Jimmy were left sitting at Jimmy's kitchen table talking about it. We said, my God, what are we going to do? They said, there's nothing else but, you know, one added talking to another, and we just got to keep going. That's where it's at. And, you know, I've read this at different places before, but I'd like to read this to you, and then I'll stop. But this is what Jimmy told me. I wrote this down. I have this little booklet here, and it tells. And who is an addict? Jimmy Kenner, 1960. I'm telling you who wrote these stories, okay? What is the Narcotics Anonymous program? Jimmy Kennan and Sylvia Wexler, 1960. Why are we here? Jimmy Kennan and Sylvia Wexler, 1960. How it works? Jimmy made some improvements in how it works. And then in 1953, they put in the steps, they put admitted an addiction there, and addicts on the step 4, 12, pardon me. And then also at the bottom, yeah, Jimmy can, you know, wrote that in there. And then, what can I do? Jimmy Kevin, 1960. And then the 12 traditions of NA was first accepted in 1953 and reestablished in 1960 as guides. Recovery and Relapse, Jimmy Kennan, 1960. We Do Recover, Jimmy Kennan, 1961. Okay, and then the story, well, that was all part of Jimmy's story, things that he had read, it was his experience. Okay. One third of my life, Phil Phillips, 1962, and from what I understand, that's fine. I Can't Do Any More Time, Penny Kennedy, 1962. Penny's passed away now. You know, and she was a very lovely woman, very nice woman. In fact, the office called before she passed away and told her that she needed to change some of her story, and she told them what they could do. But I understand since she's passed away, it has happened. Anyway. The Vicious Circle, Jean. He's Still Alive, 1962. Something Meaningful, Bob, He's Still Alive, 1962. I Was Different, Greg, 1976. Fearful Mother, Betty, 1976. That's the old broad that keeps changing her hair color. Fat Addict, Bill, 1976. and my gratitude speaks. When I care and when I share with others the NA way. That was Jimmy Kennan. Okay, and then the other, there's, I'm missing one. There's one that seemed like I was
dead.
Well, there's much more, as you know, was responsible for writing. That, you know, I could go into many, many things which I've already done, and I've talked and I've said, I'm missing, but yet he's still here. You know, I look around and I still see him. And I don't want to see it disappear. And I do want to see you grow more. I think that we need to grow. And I don't know. I think that's all I can say right now. Thank you very much. Does anybody want to ask me a question beforehand, or? Did you want to say something else?
No, I was just going to push that.
Cindy?
Hi, my name is Cindy and I'm an addict. And I came along a little bit later. I think I came along probably in the next big turn that was going on. These two people here sitting here by me, though, especially this woman has been real instrumental in my recovery. And I'm real grateful. I'm real grateful to be here. I don't know whether I like being part of history. In the extent of my vanity says I have to be a little older, but I guess I got clean at 9, maybe, right?
Yeah.
That'd be good. I came into the fellowship in 1976. And I went to my first NA meeting in Lincoln, Nebraska on a cold winter night in December, and I'm not going to go into too much about that, but I guess I came into NA when things were starting to take off again. I got clean in January 1977. I started a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous with this white book when I had 3 days clean. So I immediately was in service because I was the GSR, whatever that meant, because I started the meeting. I remember Wichita had some meetings at that point in time, and they gave me Jimmy's number. And that's when my interaction with what was known as the office at that point and Jimmy and Betty started. And what I'm going to tell you a little bit about is the service that I got into and how I see the history that's proceeded since then. There was a lot of controversy, you know. I mean, since I've come into the fellowship, there's been a lot of controversy. There's been a lot of egos. There's been a lot of death threats. There's been, when this book was being written, the most insane thing, it disappeared. I mean, there was all kinds of, the plates disappeared. All kinds of shit happened, you know. So I'll try to tell you a little bit about that as I know it. In 77 and 78, we formed the Mid-America region, which I believe at that point in time was like the second largest region outside of California. It was comprised of Kansas, Nebraska, Oklahoma, and Missouri. And there was a lot of miles covered in that region. We really didn't know about too much about the traditions. You know, it was kind of like the other piece of paper that came with the steps, but we really paid too much attention to it. You know, we were kind of renegades at that point in time, but we wanted to get meetings going, and we did. Jimmy helped us a lot. You know, we had no money. We really didn't know what we were doing. And he took hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of time just to sit, like Bill was talking about, like Betty was talking about, on the phone talking to us, you know, trying to give us some guide, you know, of what to do. There were people from other parts of the country that started coming in. I mean, I think at that point in time, we were like a real close-knit fellowship. Even though there was a lot of things going on, people wanted to see Narcotics Anonymous get going, you know, and spread like it has today. And that's what I saw happen. I mean, it was nothing for somebody to drive 300-400 miles to a meeting. You know, it was nothing for somebody to fly wherever they had to fly and use money out of their own pocket to do that in order to help Narcotics Anonymous further and carry that message. You know, and I have, I agree to some point that we've gotten lazy because we're getting spoiled. You know, we got a million meetings. I don't know how many meetings exactly we have now, but we got a lot of meetings, you know. And we bitch about going, you know, like 3 blocks, you know. And it's like about what length am I willing to go to stay clean. And I remember that's what Jimmy used to talk. I used to like go on and on and on and on, because I like to talk, you know. And I remember he used to say, you know, and I'd say, well, what are we going to do, you know, and this one doesn't want to do this, and this one doesn't want to do that, and we want to do this, you know. And he'd say, you know, just keep going, you know. And then I came up to, I knew him for quite a while, and I talked to Betty for quite a while before I ever met them. And I have to tell you about the first time I met Betty, I mean, Betty and Jimmy. 1981, I came out, I was elected the RSI from the Mid-America region, and I came out to the WSC, and they said, we're going to take you to Jimmy's house. And so we go out there to his house, and he lived out way out in the valley, you know, and it was kind of this road that there wasn't a whole lot. And we pull up in front of his house, and he's got all what were those, football helmets with all these little plants in them all over the place. Yeah. And his old beat-up truck that he carried around, you know, that he went around in. And like, I walked in, and I come up to the side of the house, and we came in through the little office that was still there. And it was like I met him, and he wasn't very big. He was kind of little shit, you know, he was about this big. And he looked at me and he goes, you're taller and prettier than I thought you'd be, you know. And we kind of like, he had a sense of humor, you know. But what amazed me was this little office. You know, I mean, there was stuff everywhere, you know. There was a little picture here that somebody had sent him, and there was something that somebody had written up here, and there was, like, letters and letters and letters, and the whole house was N.A. There was no two ways about it. That whole house was N.A. You know, they had, like, shelves with books and books and books and tapes. The tapes were amazing that people had sent him. And then I started meeting other people, you know. I remember the first time that I met Bill, he was having a fit doing that. He was hollering about something at the conference. And I thought, oh, geez, you know, and they were yelling at each other and stuff, and I thought, and I remember Doug was sitting there with his cigarette holder, you know, looking like Mr. Hollywood, and I thought, oh, geez, what have I got myself into here, you know? And everybody was like, there was a little controversy going on at that point in time, you know, and all I knew was, like, from talking to the office. But what happened from then on was I got elected that year to be the secretary of the next two conferences. And it was an experience. It was when the book was being written, and it was when the book got passed. And what I could tell you about that point in time in our history is a lot of things happened with Jimmy at that point in time, too. And you know, he did a lot for this fellowship. He did a lot for us. A lot of people did a lot for us. You know, but he stuck in there. That was the thing. You know, it was like these two people, him, maybe a couple other people, stuck in there through everything. You know, and why not? Man, those are the people that enabled us to be sitting here writing any kind of goddamn history. Because they're the ones that sat there and said, no matter what, we're not going to give up because we know there's other addicts out there that need this program. And we're going to hang in there, and we're going to go through whatever we have to do. And they weren't perfect. I mean, they got pissed off. They called everybody, you know, all kinds of names. I mean, everybody got insane. But you know what? They stayed around. They stayed around, and they kept carrying this message with this step. Yeah, we borrowed a lot of stuff. So what? So what? It worked. You know? But they hung in there to keep carrying that message on. I remember sitting down the night that I came over to meet Jimmy, and there was like me and one of my husbands, I don't know if he was a husband yet or not, and but it's long since passed. Doug, Jerry, Betty, and Jimmy started talking. You know, he loved to talk about this fellowship. He loved to talk about the people, you know, and what happened, you know. And I remember Betty came out with the tape, and she said, let's start taping some of this stuff, you know. And I know that there's a lot of stuff. I mean, we forget a lot of stuff, you know. But I know there's a lot of stuff, and I know that just with people hanging in there. But anyway, all of this controversy started with the office as it was known then, and WSC, and we were getting bigger, and people were making demands, and we had this contingency and that contingency and this one over here, and we had the purists coming out of wherever, you know, and I mean, it was like real crazy. And I remember when Jimmy left, when this whole thing happened with the office, I wanted to resign. I wanted to resign everything I was doing. And I remember what I called him up and he said, don't you dare. He says, you stay in there. He says, because you got to go ahead. You know, you got to go ahead. Jimmy never wanted a lot of credit. He just did the work. To his last days, and I talked to him maybe 2-3 days before he died while he was in the hospital. It wasn't about recognition for him. This is him. He didn't want that. He just wanted to see this fellowship grow. You know? I mean, it was like, I think we should recognize the people that helped put this together. That's my personal opinion. But why not? I mean, after all, we had to start somewhere. Let's give credit like they said where credit is due. You know, it's not like they're going to receive any royalties, for Christ's sake. You know? I mean, and then when the book came into being the year before when all the grades, the thing that they're going to give away tomorrow night, when that all started coming out, they started writing the service structure and they started doing all these different things. And, you know, that was a real wild time. There were lots of personalities, folks, let me tell you. They were in there and mine was one of them, you know. And you know, it was like, but we made it through it. The things we've made it through are what's amazing. But what I think got us to keep making it through it is because we kept going to meetings and, you know, resentment started meetings and all kinds. We kept those meetings going. You know, but as far as the history, you know, all of that happened. 1981, we started with this whole, I mean, the conference changed totally, I think, a little bit at that point in time. There was a lot more people. There were a lot more regions coming in. New York. We had the convention, the World Convention in 1980 in Wichita, and at that point in time, Florida bid for their convention. They won it for 81, which made their fellowship grow to the South Florida region. Then came New York's convention in 83. You know, And that's when I was in the Rockefeller program when addicts couldn't congregate, you know. I know what that was all about. But then New York started taking off. You know, and I mean, it has grown immensely. You know, but what all of this has done, even through all the controversy, the book got it going. From the book on. And not everybody, you know, it's like, I have to say something about the book at this point in time. The book is great. We needed the book. But God damn it, stop changing the anthem now. Let's go on to something else. You know, it's like, we need other things. We keep going into this first edition, second edition, fifth edition. I mean, for what? Let's concentrate on writing the book that has the history. Let's do some things that haven't already been done before. You know, let's take all this vast amount of information that we're getting from these things and do something else except change these goddamn sentences in these books. And make it for that. Anyway, that's not what I was thinking of. But anyway, in 82 and 83, the book came about. From that point, you know, the World Service Office got much bigger. You know, they moved to a different location. We hired a non-addict to run that, and his name was Bob Stone. He had served as our parliamentarian. I don't know if all of you know this, but he had served as a parliamentarian for WSC for a few years before that. And then they elected him into being the administrator, or the whatever they call it, of the office. To my understanding, Karina was the legal entity that we put the copyrights under, and since NA cannot hold any property, you know, we can't own any property, that was one of the reasons for that being instituted and for that, you know, coming about. Everything started to grow real fast, and I think one of the things that happened too is an important part of history is that a couple of motions were passed, you know, and I hear people talking about the fact that we spend a lot of money on people traveling around and we spend a lot of money on different things, and yes, we do. But the other side of that token is that for a long time, nobody in any other part of the country, unless they had the financial means, could be of service. You know, one of the reasons that I was not on the board of directors of the World Service Office very long after I'd been elected was I couldn't afford to fly to California every 2 months. What's happened now is people from all parts of this, you know, this fellowship, no matter where you live or your financial status, you can be of service in Narcotics Anonymous. So that's something to keep in mind when you think about the money that's being spent. Yes, there's a lot of money being spent, but there's a lot more people being able to do service. You know, some of those motions were passed. A lot of things, you know, everybody's always got an opinion. I've got an opinion, you've got an opinion, everybody's got an opinion. But what we kind of have to do sometimes is look at both sides of the token, and I think that that's what's happened. Maybe that's what's going to start happening as the real history of Narcotics Anonymous comes out. You know, and it's not about, you know, let's just put it together. You know, from what we know, it's not about trying to find something to throw in there to cause, you know, dissension. Let's just put it together as we know it. We have people in this fellowship. Not many left who were around at the beginning. We better utilize them while they're still here. You know, the people sitting at this table right here are vast sources of information. You know, out of that original group that I saw the minutes from, Jimmy had them in a frame in his house, and it was like, walking back to history, see that, you know, I got like goose pimples. And he had the minutes of that first minute meeting with all the people that signed it, you know, first and last name. But I don't think any of those people are still alive anymore. In that first one that you had to...
I had to go back to the main remember, but most of them aren't.
Yeah, most of them aren't even here, so, you know, let's take what we have, you know, and go with that. And as far as the rest of the part of history that I've been a part of, like I said, the 2WSD, watching this fellowship grow, becoming a part of not only the America region, but then moving to New York and becoming part of that region as it established. When I first moved back to New York in 84, they had 32 meetings. There's not going to be 70 meetings a week now.
All
right. A lot of meetings. You know, a lot of meetings. It grew so fast. You want to go to an insane area service, regional service. And you can't even go to one of theirs. You know. And but it's calming down, you know, because we're calming down. I think in all of it, we're calming down. You know, I mean, yeah, there's still some things going on, but we're calming down. We're finally saying, okay, let's grow up a little here. You know, it's not about fighting, it's not about bickering, it's not, let's carry this message in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, let's put together, like in this few days, we're trying to help get the history put together so that's settled once and for all. No more fighting, no more feud. I mean, there'll always be opinions, but, you know, if we get it down, that's it. You know, and go on, because we got a lot of work left to do, folks. There's a lot of addicts out there that haven't heard about us yet. And that's our primary purpose. You can take all the fucking paper, all the copies, all of this shit, but our primary purpose is to help that addict that's still out there suffering. Let's don't lose. Let's don't forget what we're here to do. You know, and this is all fine and good, and so is all the things that I've been involved in over the years. But you know what? Through the history, that's the bottom line. And that's why we're still here. It's because that has prevailed. That one addict helped another to carry that message so that no addict seeking recovery need ever die. You know, and that's, I know a lot of things about, you know, different things, but I can't remember them right now. Just like all of us, you know, and all of them said before me, if you have any questions of us, you know, or me, from 77 on, I can do the best I can to help you out with that. And that's all I can do is make myself available. I'm grateful that I was to be able to sit up here with these people, you know, because they're the ones that taught me how to, you know, how to stick around. And thanks.
Floor's open for any questions. What year did NA come to New England State? And does anybody know what year NA first appeared overseas? You know, like Europe, Italy, you know, that way?
Well, they seemed like forever that there was a guy in Australia. I don't know where the hell this guy came from, but I mean, ever since I could remember, at the beginning, it was some guy in Australia. So, I mean, that's kind of over the seas, right? But the rest of it, I really, I don't know. I mean, just, you know, that period of time that the tree came into existence, it just seemed like almost people, I mean, there was, Betty, I saw a copy here, or actually, Grover, in that great book or something. I saw that map of the original. No, it wasn't what you had.
Yeah.
With the World Service thing, the map of the original.
Team meetings in Australia in that.
But it had a map of the original regions once it came into effect, somebody had sit down and cut it up into regions. And I believe what happened is that Jimmy was responding to the phone calls that he was getting, you know what I mean? So they said, okay, a few calls are coming from here and there. So he dissected the United States and Hawaii. And so that would have been, what, about the tree came into effect what year? We must have been talking somewhere in the middle 70s.
77.
I think it was maybe a little bit, maybe somewhere around 75 or something like that. Right in it. You know, give or take.
It's hard to just...